Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
It is The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com and by the Captivate Network. You can visit them at captivate.com. Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth here with you, and a very special guest joining us out of Paris this weekend. His name is Mark Tungate. If you recognize the name, it's because he's been on the show before promoting another book. This one is called Branded Mail, Marketing to Men. And, you know, we focus so much, Brad, on marketing to women. I mean, you know, obviously there are organizations and such and saying that, you know, women make a huge majority of decisions. But what about us?
Well, oil and wrenches and, you know, Jiffy Lube, they need to target us. And beer.
I think beer, yeah. But it goes a little bit deeper than that, as we know. So.
Of course it does.
But there we go. But, here in just a moment, I also want to mention that we've got Gene Bliss coming our way, the customer experience. Using Net Promoter is what she's talking about today. If you don't know what that's all about, it'd be a good time to, you know, listen a little bit more closely. So go ahead. What do you have there?
Well, I was just going to say, you and I were talking off the air about the Olympics, and another Olympics is in the history books, as they say now.
Right,
and
right.
I thought it was just outstanding the way Visa didn't waste any time promoting Michael Phelps, that was their celebrity spokesman when they debuted a TV spot just moments after the swimmer won a all-time record for capturing the most career gold medals. It was, if you didn't see it, again, timing was outstanding. Visa's new spot, congratulations, Phelps. As if you missed it, it ran in the first commercial break following the Phelps gold medal win in the 200-meter butterfly, which, you know, the ad was all part of the Visa's Go World campaign, which is developed by our friends at TBWA Chiat Day in Los Angeles, which, of course, promotes the Visa sponsorship of the Olympic Games. But, you know, once again, just anticipating what their spokesperson might do within the environment that they're sponsoring anyway, and being at the ready to have a content on there that was meaningful to the viewer and updated, and probably had a lot of people wondering, how did they do that so quickly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how did they? Well, it's all smoke and mirrors or something like that. I don't know. You know, speaking of the Olympics, as we again wrap it up, there was a tiny detergent maker that became a part of the advertising. It's called WIN, W-I-N, the official detergent of the U.S. Olympic Committee. Even has its own Olympic pitchman, U.S. decathlete Brian Clay, who not long ago never imagined himself endorsing soap, but he did. He said, I didn't even know there was an official detergent, but, you know, it works. So if you saw WIN detergent, well, they have their mark, and they made a success of that, so that's kind of cool. So
a lot of jock straps washed that week, I'm sure.
I guess so, and a lot more. Like those almost illegal swimsuits that they had out there as well. We've got Gene Bliss coming our way right now here at the Advertising Show. Let's listen.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
The reach of the Net Promoter concept and simplicity of one ultimate question is compelling. It gives CEOs something to easily grasp and point to regarding a customer target. Here's some words to the wise about how to move it forward in the right way. Don't make Net Promoter be just about the score. If you do, all you're doing is replacing that old customer satisfaction survey with your Net Promoter survey. And don't set arbitrary targets for how far you'll improve your Net Promoter score. Especially don't look across all industries of Net Promoter scores and set yours. There are clear differences by industry. Don't set yourself up with a goal that isn't connected with your operation or your customers. And finally, create the back-end action loop that the Net Promoter concept success is based on. The whole idea behind this concept is to identify customers who love you, your promoters, and those who don't, your detractors, and to tickle out the issues causing both situations.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights from major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
Thanks, Gene Bliss. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, Mark Tungate will be joining us here momentarily. And his book is called Branded Mail, Marketing to Men. Hey, that's us, the sensitive guys here at the Advertising Show. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. AdvertisingShow.com, a great place to go anytime you can. Check it out. A lot of stuff up here. We've been doing this since 01, so there's a lot of good content as well. So tell your friends about it, too. Magazine advertising is hurting a little bit too as well. I mean, what else isn't hurting? You know, last year, the all-important September issues of fashion and beauty magazines such as Condé Nast's Vogue and Hearst Marie Claire were thick enough to, I like the way they put this, thick enough to throw out the backs of mail carriers across the country. The champ was Vogue, weighing in at a hefty 4.9 pounds, thanks to 725 pages of glossy ads. But this year, it's a different story, according to the story from the Wall Street Journal. As September issues begin hitting the newsstands, two-thirds of the 16 top at fashion and beauty magazines by number of ad pages are smaller than a year ago. W Magazine, also published by Condé Nast, has 18% fewer ad pages. Vogue has 674 pages of ads this year, down 7%, while Hearst Cosmopolitan is 6 pages, or 3.2%. lighter. So they put the these magazines on a diet or something like that, I guess. Huh? And with that goes what? Advertising revenue. So anyway, so that's down a little bit here too.
You know, it's interesting because newspapers, you know, first lost ads to Monster.com, then classifieds to Craigslist. Now, staying with your theme there, Ray, they're at risk of losing another yet smaller but still important revenue stream, and that's paid obituaries to the internet. Apparently, Monsters.com founder Jeff Taylor is testing a new website, Tributes.com, for a full-blown September launch, and this would also come at a time when newspapers are already, of course, as you pointed out, facing ever worsening declines in other areas of advertising. Online obits have been around, of course, for a few years, with more than 650 papers belonging to Legacy.com, but Monster plans to entirely bypass newspapers, relying on funeral homes, which I thought was smart, and other sources for background on the deceased. So it's an interesting concept.
Wow. I had no idea. Very interesting. We've got to take a break here. We'll bring on Mark Tungate out of Paris this weekend in just a moment here at the Advertising Show.
Here comes another typical commercial. I could get your attention by blowing a foghorn or maybe an awesome scream. But even that doesn't cut through the clutter enough to really captivate your attention. If you're an advertiser and you really want your message to be heard, then reach for the golden nugget of advertising. It's what's called a captive audience. One company delivers this much sought-after captive audience. And believe it or not, it's just the people you want to reach, business professionals and decision makers. It all happens in 23 of North America's largest and most progressive markets. And the captive audience is right there in the elevators of select premier office towers. Over 8,000 high-quality video screens get people's attention with what research proves they want, news and information. It's all combined with your branded message in a way that only this captive audience sees and absorbs. Cut the waste in your advertising budget by reaching just who you want to reach. Don't just advertise. Captivate your audience. To find out more, click on Captivate.com.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and...
Welcome back on The Advertising Show. As promised, author of Branded Mail, Mark Tungate, here out of Paris this weekend with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Mark, we appreciate you arranging your weekend schedule to join us here. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I've been here before, and it's always delightful to come back.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're a fan as yours as well, Mark, and we appreciate your time today. And by the way, I'd like to encourage all of our listeners to check out Mark's new book, Branded Mail. Ray and I thought it was a book about tattoos, but after reading it, we realized it's all about marketing to men, and published by Kogan Page. Very good read, by the way, and great job, Mark. We had you on, as you mentioned, a while back. You wrote Adland, a great book about the history of advertising. Your newest book, Branded Mail, discusses how to market to men. I'm curious, what is it about marketing to men that is now topical and need to be written about? And what were people doing as far as marketers when it came to targeting men that really was, I guess, for the lack of a better way of describing it, a little off-target in the past?
I don't think it's necessarily that they've been off-target in the past. It sort of depends on what sector you're talking about. One of the reasons that I decided to write the book was because I had a meeting with someone from Unilever, and obviously they make huge amounts of cosmetics for everybody, for men and women. And one of the things this person told me was that she felt that the men weren't buying enough stuff for their skin, particularly. And this was a huge market for Unilever and for similar companies. And she was struggling to find out how she could target men as customers. And funnily enough, just this morning I was talking to a friend of mine who's a journalist at the UK edition of Esquire magazine. And they've just done a big survey about men's approach to grooming and that kind of thing. And they discovered that out of all these thousands of men that they interviewed, only 25% of them claim to use a moisturizer on a regular basis. So that means that there's a huge market out there for companies that sell those kind of products. And I think that's really what inspired the book, which it was trying to investigate how brands that target men can do so more effectively. And in other words, perhaps open up a market that seems to have been slightly neglected in a way.
So has marketing to men significantly changed in the past, I don't know, 20 years or so?
I think that, I think it's certainly become more subtle. But I think the reason for that is that men have changed. Obviously, we don't have the same view of our role that we did a while ago. You know, before feminism came along, let's say, our role was very clean-cut. We were fathers. We were the breadwinner. And then, we've seen this evolution where our role has changed. Men and women have become much more equal, although I'm sure many women will say that there's still a long way to go. But even so, I mean, things have changed, and we've become aware of different sides of our personalities, different sides of our role in society, and I think advertising has had to change to reflect that in a way, and that's why you had kind of marketing theories coming along, like the metrosexual, which a lot of people were speaking about a few years ago, and that became the basis for a lot of marketing strategy to try and perhaps approach men in a bit more of a feminine, in quotation marks, way, trying to encourage them to take more care of their appearance.
Sure.
To perhaps consider themselves to be more of a kind of a peacock type character rather than this down-to-earth pragmatic fellow who was just there really to earn a living and to support the family. You know, he was encouraged to perhaps be a little bit more egocentric and a little bit to basically check himself out in the mirror a bit more. And I think we've seen a lot of marketing, you know, which encourages men to do that.
I like the description with the bathroom there as far as shaving, you know, using the razor that his girlfriend bought him, the classic type razor. I could just see that. I've been looking for something like that as well, and haven't talked my wife to do it. They're so doggone expensive nowadays, but little things like that do make a difference in a daily routine, don't they?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And that's actually one of the things I wanted to do with the book was give it a kind of narrative, because most marketing books, they're stuffed with facts and can be very useful, but they're not particularly entertaining. You know, they're not something you want to read. You tend to dip into them purely when you're looking for information. And I wanted to create a sort of narrative. So at the beginning of each chapter, basically the whole book is a day in the life of this character who is a kind of quite involved, marketing friendly, if you like, almost a bit beyond sort of newer version of a metrosexual, if you like, someone who's at home with his with being a guy, who's a very, in a way, a very normal guy, but who's integrated the idea that it's okay to use a moisturizer and skincare, and who cares about its appearance, etc. So the book describes his day, and there's a sort of narrative. I guess that's the sort of frustrated, like all journalists, I'm a bit of a frustrated novelist. So I wanted to tell a story. So I tell the story of this guy's day, and as you follow him, you go through different scenarios. And absolutely, the first scenario is him. We discover him in the bathroom at the beginning of the day with the shaving routine. And in fact, that's a very important access point for marketers, because you can market a whole lot of other products around this very male moment of the morning shave. You can market all sorts of skincare and grooming products around that that kind of rendezvous with the mirror every morning, and that's what I was trying to get at in that scene. And the razor in question is actually a real object, the hero, so to speak, or perhaps anti-hero, depending on how you look at him, is based on some of my experiences, some of my friends and some of the people I interviewed. But the razor is actually mine, so that's something personal I put in, was this kind of 1950s safety razor that my that my French fiance bought me for my birthday.
I can picture that very clearly too, as well. Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that your pet name for a lot of your friends refer to you as Mark the Peacock Tongate. So
really, you know what? Yeah, that's worrying, isn't it?
going back to the metrosexual for a moment, you mentioned it was coined a few years ago. Did advertising play any role in creating that that term, or sustaining or growing that term, Mark?
Oh, absolutely, very much so. In fact, originally the term was invented by an English journalist called another marker, Mark Simpson, and he mentioned this concept in a in an article in the Independent newspaper quite a few years ago. And he was talking about how marketers were trying to find a way of making straight men consume fashion to the extent that gay men did. And he invented this term, metrosexual, of a guy who was just gay enough to appeal to marketers, because he cared about his appearance, etc., like many of the things we've been talking about. So it was quite a provocative article, in a way. He was trying to sort of ruffle feathers a bit. But then there was a bit of a pause, and then the term was appropriated or borrowed and adapted very skillfully and very subtly by Marion Saltzman, who is a kind of trend tracker, a very well-known one, who was working for an advertising agency at the time. She still works in advertising. I think at the time she was working for Euro RSCG, although I stand to be corrected on that. But she began to write about the metrosexual, but took a slightly different slant, and made him much more accessible, made him much more of an everyday kind of guy, but definitely using the traits of somebody who was not vain, but somebody who had a strong interest in looking good. And she really popularized the term, and it became a much more accessible and widely used term than when it was just used by Mark Simpson in his article for The Independent. And I think the metrosexual, the way Marion described him, became a much more appealing kind of character for a wider spectrum of men. They could identify more with him.
The book is called Branded Male Marketing to Men. Mark Tongate is our special guest out of Paris this weekend in the Advertising Show. We've got more for you in just a moment.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
The book is called Branded Mail, Marketing to Men. The author is Mark Tungate, a second-time guest here on The Advertising Show. And it's great to have you back, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and check out TungateInParis.com to learn more about today's guest and wonderful author and a line of great books worth checking out. Let's talk a little bit about the depiction of men in movies and TV, Mark. Have any of these portrayals affected the way marketers communicate to males today?
Yeah, absolutely. Or it's kind of interactive. It could be the other way around as well. And I think there's been an evolution here as well in terms of role models are very important for men and for marketers too. They need they almost need personalities to hang their products on. I devote quite a lot of time in the book to talking about James Bond, not just because he's a Brit, but also because he's one of the ultimate marketing vehicles for people who are trying to target men. Right from the early days, actually, even in the books, which are written by Ian Fleming in the 1950s, even in the books, there are many brands mentioned, his Rolex watch, his Savile Row suits, etc. And that tradition has continued throughout the entire series. But interestingly, if you look at the evolution of Bond and the character and the people who play him, he always reflects his era. And the last Bond before the current one was Pierce Brosnan, who was a rather more elegant and slightly more dandyish, if I can say that, character than Daniel Craig, the current incarnation, who's much more brutal and rougher around the edges. So that might indicate, if we wanted to read something into that, that the current role models for men are again going back to a more basic and tougher form of masculinity, and perhaps after the 1990s, when we were encouraged to be consumers, when we were encouraged to kind of consider the more feminine side of our personality, perhaps now there's been a slight backlash, and we're after kind of very strong, definite male values and a very strong, definite male image, and perhaps movies reflect that as well. But having said that, you'll note that the new Bond played by Daniel Craig also has a sensitive side. He fell in love with his girlfriend, which never really happened in the previous films. And even if you look at other kind of parallel characters like Jason Bourne, they're at the same time masculine and authoritative, but sensitive and conflicted as well. So perhaps that means that, you know, to be a male today, or the ideal male sought after by marketers, you have to be both extremely masculine and almost, my father or our father's version of masculine, solid, reliable, etc., but also having integrated all of the positive aspects of metrosexuality as well. Clean, nice haircut, smelling great, and concern for appearance. So it's quite difficult. It's quite complex to be a man today, in a way.
Yeah, well, let's staying with that masculinity topic. Different cultures around the world have varying levels of masculinity. That's no surprise, and that will undoubtedly affect a marketing message. Take us through some of the differences between the American male, European male, Asian male, etc.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can certainly draw interesting parallels between I live in France, as you've mentioned, and I can certainly draw interesting parallels between the French and the British male, for example. When I first came to France, it struck me that that French men were already much more in touch with their feminine side than British men. I think men are quietly in touch with it, but they tend to keep it covered up. It's the whole stiff upper lip thing. You know, we'll stand at the bar, we'll be very masculine, we won't show our emotions. Whereas French men tend to be outwardly more sensitive. They're certainly are willing to express an interest in clothes, in cooking, in wine, in the finer things of life, which the British male might consider as slightly suspect and perhaps not masculine enough. It sounds like a cliche, but it is true. For instance, when you go to a party in England, if you're a bloke, you're expected pretty much to talk about soccer. And if you don't know anything about soccer, you're immediately an object of suspicion. Whereas in when you go to a similar party in or dinner party in France, you end up talking about food and wine and the latest arty movies at the cinema. So there's quite a big difference there. I've never lived in Asia, but I did some research for the book, and actually there's all sorts of interesting things going on over there. In Korea, for example, in South Korea, men are becoming a bit more androgynous, actually, according to my research. They're experimenting more with gender roles and cosmetics, skincare, and even makeup for men sells there slightly better. It's still a tiny percentage of the population, but it sells there slightly better than it does here. And apparently that's due to pressure from women. Apparently South Korean women are very interested in this more feminized man, and so they've kind of put pressure on him to take off the rough edges. But all around Asia, you see, for instance, spa-type situations for men are very popular. Getting kind of spa-type treatments, getting your skin treated, removing body hair, that kind of thing. I have a feeling that's part of certain Asian cultures anyway, but certainly as a leisure activity, it seems to be quite prevalent in Asia at the moment.
A more sensitive man there, that's right. Branded male?
and that's something that's quite that's fairly new. In the US, well, I spent some time, I lived in New York for about 4 months in 1999, so that doesn't really make me an expert. What I did appreciate when I lived in New York were those great kind of traditional barber shops where you could get a shave and a haircut and the hot towel and all that kind of thing, which doesn't really exist in Paris, and which I really appreciated over there, which is a kind of a different way of, it's still pampering yourself in a way, but it's a kind of, it seems to be a much more, dynamic a much more straightforward way of pampering yourself in a way. I don't know, maybe you know more about that than me, you guys live there.
There we go. Mark Tungate is our special guest here. Branded Male Marketing to Men is the book, brand new. And we'll talk more with Mark here coming up in just a moment on The Advertising Show.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
I love the sound of the rain.
And I love the taste of your fresh fruit coffee.
Oh, thanks, but it's not fresh fruit. It's Nutreka.
Like we said, nothing outlasts the Energizer.
Mark Tungate's book is called Branded Male, Marketing to Men. It's a brand new book, too, out of Mark. And, Mark, it's good to have you here on The Advertising Show. Welcome.
Well, thanks.
You know, I think most of us have know or have heard that more men are online than women. And when it comes to shopping, I think women tend to go to brick and mortar, and men would be more apt to shop online and make purchases. I'm curious, when it comes to media channels, Mark, are there any particular channels that are more effective to reaching men than others?
Well, certainly you're correct in saying that men like shopping online, particularly for sensitive or they consider to be sensitive goods like the kind of skincare products that we've mentioned.
And pornography.
Sorry?
And pornography.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure that's a very popular media channel with guys as well.
Right, exactly.
And I think, you know, there are obviously certain ways of targeting them, TV being obviously still very effective. One thing you shouldn't do, apparently, is try and target them through through literature, because one of the surprising things I discovered in my research was that men don't read novels. They read biographies mainly, or factual books, and they read obviously some novels, but they don't read as much fiction as women do. So that was a little anecdote that came out of my research, which I found interesting. They read magazines. Obviously, there are more and more magazines aimed at men. I mentioned Esquire earlier, and you have GQ, Details, and all the rest of them, all of which are increasingly well-written and attractive, and doing very well at the newsstands, bearing in mind that we live in an online world. There still seems to be quite a demand for magazines, and there are more magazines for men now than there were at the beginning of the Internet, which seems to be kind of to go against a trend, really. Men also read newspapers, but the old cliche of them starting with the sports pages is actually true. A lot of research shows that guys will go to the sports section first when they start reading newspapers, and they read newspapers in a slightly different way to women as well. They tend to look for nuggets of news, whereas women prefer a more analytical, features-based approach. This is not me saying this in order to be sexist. This is research that was done by the Newspaper Society in England, and has been backed up by research elsewhere in the world. So, you know, so if you want to place your ad targeting a guy, you'd be better off doing it in the sports section. That's absolutely true.
You know, we just have a little bit of time left here. I want to get a couple of quick reactions to some questions here. Notorious Axe campaign. We've all seen it and heard about it. It was quite successful, but yet heavily reliant on sex. And the underlying message was, you know, really sex-oriented, to the point where it really was a bit borderline on ridiculous, yet, as I mentioned, very, very successful. Any thoughts on that campaign, Mark?
Well, I think that my interestingly, actually, the brand has a different name in England. It's called Lynx. I've never really understood why, but anyway, it's just out of the subject, really. But I think the reason the campaign works is because they push the idea so far that by putting this stuff on, you'll become irresistible to women, that it becomes farcical. For me, it was an idea that works very well in the UK, because it has this kind of British absurdity. The humour is not at all politically correct, and it's taken to an extreme. So I think in terms of satire, it works very well. And I think the target audience of young men appreciate the. I think there's an underlying irony. I don't think it's dumb advertising at all. I think there's an underlying irony, and there's a kind of a second degree, as they say in France, which means that that you know you don't have to take it seriously at all. It doesn't take itself seriously. We're not seriously expected to believe the promise. And I think for young men with a certain sense of humour, it probably works very well. And they've done lots of interesting things with the product range as well to expand it. So no, I think it's pretty clever advertising.
Well, thank you, Mark. An upcoming purchase, sir.
There we go. We upcoming purchase. Branded Male Marketing to Men is the book, and if you want to go to the website too, it's Tungate Paris, Tungate in Paris, I should say. And buy the book, enjoy it, and you'll learn a lot there. Mark, thanks for another great book, and thanks for being here, too.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
There is somewhere better to get inspired creative ideas, and this is where it's at. OpenAd.net, the first online platform for advertisers, changing the way that ideas are created and traded. Access nearly 11,000 creative minds representing 125 countries around the world, waiting online to have a go at your brief. Imagine the impact such range and diversity of talent can have on your next advertising campaign. All creative work is IP cleared before you get it. We take care of all the details, while you get brilliant ideas in a fraction of the time, at a lower cost, and with a lot less fuss. No endless meetings, no away days. When a client needed a PR campaign to include people who couldn't make it to the G8 rally, they got 53,000 people to join a virtual protest and a campaign that won 2 International Creative Awards. OpenAd.net, busting down the walls of the ad industry. Put us to the test. Just go to OpenAd.net and give us a try. What have you got to lose? The future starts here.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe.
It's the Advertising Show. Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe here, and thanks to Mark Tungate, author of Branded Mail, Marketing to Men. Calling you a metrosexual or something like Brad, or you probably shouldn't have called him that, but that's the way it goes. But anyway, good to be with you here. We have, in just a few moments, let me see, who do we have coming up here? Shamin Abbas, our activist for excellence. And what she's talking about in a few moments is having a consistent message. In other words, making that a consistent message, in your PR efforts. So it's good stuff to listen to as well. Crest is a toothpaste you know well. They've been around for a little while. And they have a new toothpaste flavor coming out, as a matter of fact, next month, very soon. And this time the expression BAM won't be enough to describe it. In other words, Emeril's BAM. Out, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Basically, Emeril had that. So what they're suggesting here is through October 17th, September 15th through October 17th, consumers can submit videos featuring their take on the brand in 10 words or less. The winning phrase will be incorporated in upcoming TV spots advertising the new flavor, which replaces Lemon Ice. Lemon Ice launched in 05, followed a contest in which consumers voted for the flavor they wanted most. Procter & Gamble also polled consumers.
Cajun flavor.
What is that?
Cajun flavor, which goes with the BAM.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It says basically they're looking for the best catchphrase for Crest whitening expressions. So, again, Emeril, not going to do it, but we've got something else for you. So it's kind of cool. So
yeah, that is cool.
Look for that. Go to YouTube. You find out how to participate. What a great way to come up with something new. Ask your consumers, right?
Engage your customer. Yeah. Have you ever been caught with a DWT, Ray?
A DWT?
Driving while texting?
No.
Well, apparently text messaging, emailing, and instant messaging while operating a motor vehicle continues to distract. No surprise here. Young drivers, a new study released recently shows that nearly half of the drivers between ages 18 to 24 are communicating with their mobile devices when they are behind the wheel. But it's not just limited to youngsters, Ray. 27% are drivers 25 to 34, but they say that older drivers, 55 up, are more cautious with less than 2% admitting to texting or emailing while driving. My feeling is the 55-plus market can't read their PDA device, so that's why they're not texting or emailing. It has nothing to do with being cautious.
It's dangerous. It's dangerous.
But they can't see it.
Yeah, they can't see it. I totally will validify that. You can't see it. It's just not a good idea. They need to make it bigger. I don't want one of those what do they call them? The cricket phones or whatever it's called. I would like something a little bit more large.
No, I like to keep mine right there in my Depends. That instead of just hook it to the side there, it's really nice.
I understand. And that's a whole other show, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Shamin Abbas, our activist for excellence here on The Advertising Show, tells us about keeping a consistent message. Let's listen.
And now it's time for Activist for Excellence. PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
How your PR firm can help keep your messaging consistent and cultivate your brand. The best thing for a client business is to have an advertising agency and a public relations firm who are both involved and committed to staying on message and constantly affirming your brand. Each can do wonders to bolster the other's efforts. Advertisers invest in an ad agency's expertise to create a visual representation of its core persona and message, and a good PR firm will absorb that representation and the language used in the advertising and marketing materials and model its language and tone upon that bedrock. It is very important that ad agencies and PR agencies work together for the common good of the client, and both should be included in strategic sessions in which each is made aware of what the other side is doing. There is a tremendous synergy when the ad agency and the PR agency get together over this common goal. For example, since the ad agency has written ads and brochures using some very specific language, it makes sense to incorporate that language into pitches and releases. No one need reinvent the wheel, and it is in the client's best interest that even its publicity carries over into its branding. They're all parts of a cohesive whole, and that's ultimately what the branding is all about. PR efforts result in outcomes that are less controlled than straight ad buys, where the message is 100% under the agency and client's control. That is another reason that your PR firm need to be on point with your brand and your message, so that it comes across in a segment or a story. If the client is being interviewed, it's the PR firm's responsibility to help prep the person and remind them of those key taglines, phrases, and overall messages, and once again reinforce everyone's hard work.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional, with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
Thanks, Shamin, here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. And thanks again to our very special guest, Mark Tungate, who has a brand new book out. We need you to get it, okay? It's called Marketing to Men. What I really like about the book, too, Brad, is it's got the little toolkits in there that show you, you know, it's kind of a summary of what we talked about. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
It is good. Good book.
What do you have there?
Well, I was going to mention that CNN apparently plans to analyze the out-of-home TV ad exposure of 10 brands, which I think is really smart on their part. The TV network has commissioned integrated media measurement to collect and study the data with an eye towards bringing more accountability to ads shown in bars, dorm rooms, gyms, etc. You know, a lot of people, I think, Ray, view CNN outside of the home, and they're not getting credit for it, so effectiveness of TV ads inside and outside of the family room, so to speak, will be researched by CNN, and they're going to share this data with agencies and their participating clients in 2009. But smart move, I think, on CNN's part.
A very smart move, I think, as well. It's been an interesting year for the automotive industry. It's called losing money, for the most part, at least. And basically what they're suggesting, the flight of advertising dollars to the Internet, is one explanation for the pain felt by traditional media. Well, we knew that already. Another culprit is Detroit, what they're saying. For all the discussion of new media's role in hurting profits and revenues at traditional media outlets, newspapers, magazines, broadcast television, and radio, the sharp downturn in the auto industry is another big culprit, and it's taken an increasing toll on the advertising revenue. They basically said, this is out of the New York Times, in the first quarter alone, the auto industry spent $414 million less on advertising than in last year's first quarter, according to TNS Media Intelligence. Times they are a-changing, as Bob Dylan would say.
You know, Ray, the Hummer dealership there in Houston, I heard, did a promotion where they're paying $10,000 per customer to take a Hummer and drive it off their lot.
Really?
They're paying them for this because they can't afford to keep them, and they say, please, just take this car. No, I'm kidding, but I got to tell you that discounts on SUVs and these guzzlers are unbelievable. They can't get rid of them.
Absolutely. And people still like to drive them. They just don't like to put $150 worth of gas in them. That's all. So alternative energy, a good thing, like a Smart or something like that. Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. And also brought to you by our friends at Captivate Network. You can visit them at captivate.com. Go get the book by Mark Tungate. It's called Branded Mail, Marketing to Men. And join us next week. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.